Transmission will start in 5 seconds from now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, in.
Hello and welcome to the Roy Harper Podcast. This is episode number 20 for March 2009. In this show, news update, an interview with George Fort, part one of two parts, the A to Z of Harper, this month it's the letter S, listener feedback, and as usual, a selection of music. Two bits of news to start off with. Firstly, last month I mentioned that Roy had been asking for questions to be directed towards him on the Manchester City football website, and the answers have come back in now. There's some very interesting comments and bits of news from Roy. The URLs are a bit cumbersome, so I've put them in the show notes, which you can find on stormcock.net. It's www.manchestercity.vitalfootball.co.uk/article.asp?A=, and then for part one it's 142826. But as I say, the URL will be in the show notes. Much easier just to click a link than try and type it in while I'm reading it out to you. But have a look at those two, that's quite interesting. The second thing is, we've talked a bit before on the podcast, particularly during interviews, about the hors d'oeuvres magazine, and Lynn Branson, in the interview that she gave in over the last two episodes, called for a return for the magazine. She said she really missed having that as a fanzine. And it seems that that's finally tipped the balance over and caused a certain amount of interest, because Pete Cunliffe, who was the original instigator of the magazine before Darren Crisp took it over, is interested in doing a kind of anniversary issue later this year. A full colour version with lots of photos and input from people. And he's asked for two things. First of all, for a call of interest, really, to see if it's worth doing such a thing. And secondly, if people have interesting things to say about how Roy and Nick's music has influenced their life, or anecdotes, or, you know, things they just want to share with a kind of fanzine audience, could they get in touch with him? Now, the place to go and find out more about this is on stormcock.net on the forums. There'll be a link to forums up there, and if you go into the general forum, you'll see that there's a topic there all about hors d'oeuvres and what Pete's got planned. You can also find there that he has a poster that he's designed that's going to be hopefully handed out at Nick Harper gigs now and in the near future. If you're sufficiently fanatical, you can print your own ones out, of course, and give them to anybody you meet on the street, who I'm sure will be delighted and not think you're nutter at all. Okay, so some music first of all before we get stuck into the interview, and you'll find out why I'm playing this track later on when we get further through George's interview. But I've decided to play The Monster from the album The Green Man. Speed of light, white scarf and plastic bear floating through troposphere.
Now that there's no one left to vote for, and there's very rarely been any voices of the people who were not of the machine, of the giant public monster, eat and survive as at the scene, swearing blind it never saw one hide in the bones that everyone seen, so that everybody knows that the monster goes insane. The revolution's always over. The apocalypse is now. All hands are on the keyboard, hardly any on the plow. The new government's the old one, same old hand back at the helm. Lapsing back into religion, letting voices overwhelm. Well, everybody knows that everybody goes insane. It got so crazy on the front line, men in barricades to wait on the motherboards of freedom for the hordes of solid state. But that was long before the menu would have a problem with the date. As the mice became the men, far too late, far too late. Now that everybody knows that everybody goes insane. Tip of my tongue before he speaks, right after he's wrong. My church is now down in the dungeon through the 14th corridor. Virtual walls and somersaulting through the electronic horror. At a level of PlayStation where the rich become the poor. Down on bended knees and praying for much more, for so much more. 'Cause everybody knows that everybody goes insane. Now that there's no one left to vote for, only fools to vote against. All the refugees surrender, the perimeter's been fenced. 6 billion dreamers are all banged up by the sacrament of dough. Parasites of the great religion of the WTO, where everybody knows that everybody goes insane. the tip of the tongue. Before he speaks, right after he's wrong. So I must now give up the memory of all ideas of freedom's gone. Be as silent as I'm angry about my trip through Babylon. View the building of the fireball with the psyche of the snake. Make my kill at every lunchtime and sleep it off till I'm awake. Till everybody knows that everybody goes insane.
This month, our interviewee is Mr. George Fort, who I'm talking to due to the wonders of the internet on a line over to Brooklyn, I believe. Hello, George.
Hi, how you doing, Paul?
Well, I'm doing pretty well, thanks. it's 3:20 p.m. in the UK, and I've already done a full day's work, pretty much, so I'm pretty tired, but I'm sure that talking to you will wake me up. How are you?
I'm doing good. Kind of just waking up here.
Right, okay. Well, first of all, I suppose, for those of you, those of the listeners that haven't heard your name or don't remember where they've heard it before, let's have a bit of background, really. Would you like to tell us a bit about yourself and what your Roy connection is?
Okay. Well, I'm an artist that spends most of my time working in television animation. Right. As a designer, particularly background designs. And so lately the things I've been doing are Cartoon Network Adult Swim shows. Mm-hmm. Currently supervising backgrounds for a show called The Venture Brothers, and recently worked on an exciting show called Super Jail, and loads of other stuff in the past, including stupid kids shows. And but it's fun. It's fun lately that I've been working on adult stuff. That's been really fun.
I have to say, actually, I'm not familiar with most of it, so perhaps I'll have to.
You've got to be 20 years old and in a
well,
college
I am.
Dormitory.
I am 20 years old, and then and then a bit more. Well, maybe two times 20 and a bit more. Yeah.
Yeah, that's me too. I had actually. Where to start my Roy connection? How I got involved with him was in I guess first I should say it was really through your website or through the Stormcock list. I first heard his music really through This Mortal Coil's.
Ivo
Watts.
They covered Another Day, didn't they?
That's right. Yeah. So the first song I heard was Another Day, which and I was a big Cocteau Twins fan as well. And, I like all kinds of music. Anyhow, when they released a box set of the three albums for This Mortal Coil, they put in a fourth disc called Originals. And on there was the first track on the CD was Another Day.
Oh, what? Original recording?
Yeah, and it was all original. I mean, all right. This Mortal Coil, those really, for the most part, it's just different covers. Like there's Tim Buckley songs and Big Star songs and lots of English stuff that I think a lot of people hadn't heard, and it's sort of kind of 80s, late 80s people from the 4AD label doing all these neat interpretations of, I'd say mostly English. Well, maybe that's not true, but you know, interesting music from the 60s or 70s.
Right.
And, you know, neat kind of melancholy stuff.
Mm.
And, you know, really cool versions. And anyway, so, but the, so this disc was originals, and it was neat. He put on all the original tracks of, you know, that would were from the records. And the first thing on there was Another Day. And that's, that one struck me bigger than in any of the others.
When, what year was that then, George, roughly? Do you know?
Oh, that would have been like 1990 okay. or 91. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I remember I was not real. I wasn't finished with school. I was sort of in between school. And I remember driving around this delivery truck I was doing. And I just remember playing that song over and over again and just being transfixed. So I started going to the local record shops.
Ah, this is a familiar story.
Yeah. And hunting down the Roy Harper. And there was a neat store in downtown Portland where I was at the time, where I grew up in Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in there and I found some Roy Harper records, and kind of right away, I went to only a few good shops, and I asked this kind of old, this cool old rockin' dude that was running the store. I said, "Well, what's a good one? Which one should I get?" And he's like, "Any of them, all of them."
Oh,
you know? So that was, you know, nice endorsement, you know, nice. So I grabbed Stormcock.
Good choice.
And I think maybe just Stormcock.
Mm.
I think I just grabbed Stormcock first right away, just right. By dumb luck, you know.
Yeah.
And later went back and grabbed Bonemingvais and Work of Heart.
Right.
That's what they had. And so I put on Stormcock at home and, you know, blew me away, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just especially the first side, just, you know, and the sort of transition between hors d'oeuvres and, you know, the end of hors d'oeuvres and then going into Same Old Rock.
Mm,
and,
mm.
You know, just like, what is going on? Because it was different than Another Day, you know?
Yeah, just
but
a bit.
The same, but
the
different.
Same, but
you know,
different,
but,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's same, but epic, you know? And I was like, what's he singing about? My God, this is great stuff.
Yeah.
So then, you know, and Bonemingvais was good. And it took me a little bit longer to get into that one, I guess. But there were tracks on there that I really liked. And then I think when I finally got to Work of Heart, that one kind of, I you know, this is like one summer or something. And then I kind of, I thought I liked it, but I was like, well, you know, it wasn't as good. You know, it was a sort of a strange progression there.
Yeah, that's kind of my least favorite, actually, if I can have a least favorite.
Uh-huh. But then on that record, there's songs that I really love, like I Still Care, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was fantastic. Really love that song. Then I went off and I got back. I went back to college and I ended up moving to Chicago. And I kind of forgot all about the Roy Harper stuff, but it's kind of in the back of my head. And I was kind of looking for it from time to time. Of course, it wasn't on CD anywhere. You know, I just couldn't find it.
Yeah, yeah.
Then one day in a record shop, I found a Geffen release of Unhinged.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yeah. I remember that came out around then. And that's a really good album, really great live album.
Really good. Yeah. And so I hadn't heard the... the more mature Roy, you know, it just heard up to Work of Heart.
Nicely put.
So I put that on and was blown away again. It just came right back because I kind of was in the back of my head like, yeah, I'd like to hear more Roy Harper, but, you know, couldn't find it or whatever. Well, just sort of doing other things. And then I, you know, became obsessed. Then was the moment where, you know, I became... You know, where I listen to this podcast and I hear, like, it's comforting to hear that I'm not the only
You're
one.
You're not alone. Yeah, that's right.
Not alone.
It's a little support group all on its own.
That's right. Yeah, hello. My name's George. I listen to Rock. So, And especially, I loved seeing that there he was with Nick, you know. Mm-hmm. I liked that picture in the back, and I loved hearing especially the same old rock, which had become kind of my favorite thing that I'd heard up till then. I was like, oh, I got to hear it. It's the Ends with same old rock. And, you know, what a great version it is. Yeah. It's an amazing version. So, and, you know, and I loved how his voice had changed, you know, and I thought in a nice kind of authoritative way.
Yeah.
And so... So I went on the hunt, and I found this record store that, before long, the science fiction stuff was coming out. So, you know, that was, 93 or something like that?
Yeah, 92. I guess so, because Once was around 1990, Unhinged was around then. Yeah, and then we had Burn the World, and...
Right.
Yeah.
So I eagerly snatched up, and I had this, I found a good record store in Chicago, and I was buying all those. So... Shortly after that, you know, I was becoming, you know, making mixtapes for people.
Yeah.
And trying to turn everyone I knew.
On. Yeah, onto. That's right.
And so I was talking to a good friend of mine that I had been to school with. And I said, you know, I was like, oh, somehow we were talking about it. And he's like, well, you know, I think that there's a website about him.
All right.
And my friends have, you know. Wasn't particularly a huge Roy Harper fan, but he just a big music buff. And I was like, you know, I think there's a website. And I was like, really? And so that was actually my first internet experience as well, actually. It was like seeking your mailing list.
Yeah, in the old days. In the old days.
That's right.
Yeah, wow.
And I had a girlfriend. We had no computer, but my girlfriend was – I had finished college. At that point, I had finally started working – as in animation, and actually it was right before, I guess. I had just finished college, but she was still in school, and so I would sneak into, I'd like use her card or whatever and sneak into the computer lab. And I was learning the internet, and also, you know, I met great people like Eero Koskinen. And,
Eero's great.
You know, these... Great guys.
He's
like,
on my wish list for people to have on the interview, by the way. He doesn't know that yet, so if he's listening, he's probably fallen off his chair now.
That's right. So, you're next. But, Eero and other people were really nice sending me some live recordings, you know, some of the BBC stuff you know, the Half Moon Putney gigs and stuff that people had recorded.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was... just really into it because and I figured, you know, I don't know if I'll ever get to see this guy, you know, because he hasn't been to the States.
No,
forever.
It's a tricky thing being a Harper fan if you're not in the UK.
That's
or
right.
At least it was then, because he was doing so many gigs, but not outside of the very small island, you know.
Yeah, and maddening, doubly maddening, because, you know, even less people know about him here.
Yeah.
So you're all enthusiastic, like, listen to this, and like, that sounds good. You know, what's wrong with you? all my friends seem to put up with it. But you know, there'd be the odd, you know, you get the odd person that is interested.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, there's a lot going on in his music, I think, that, it's not necessarily just casual listening.
It's not casual in any way, no. And that's one of the things. You once you start analysing it or you know, enjoying it in a certain way, you suddenly realise that there's layer upon layer.
That's right.
And that becomes very evident. Well, we'll talk about this in a bit, obviously. But
That's right, yeah. So anyways, what happened from then was on there, you know, I'm reading about all these great gigs going on at the Half Moon Putney, which I'm still... I'm quite jealous, you know.
You wouldn't be if you'd been to the Half Moon Putney and knew what a little pit that back room was that we all used to sit in. You'd get stuck to the carpet if you stayed in one position for too long because of the amount of beer that had soaked into it. But
that sounds great to me. Anyways, so and I remember Darren. You know, there would be the occasional messages from an American or something on Stormcock.
Mm.
And I remember there suddenly, and I think Darren must have been just inundated or something with enthusiastic fans and stuff.
Oh, right.
And I guess from the US, because at one point I remember there was a message from Darren, and I remember always loving reading Darren's, you know,
yeah,
his messages, because it's like, ah, what's going on? You know,
that's
the real
right,
scoop.
That's right.
And then I remember one time this frustrated email from Darren saying, you know, and all these people in the U.S. they keep, you know, sending me messages, you know, like, don't expect Roy to be on your doorstep anytime soon.
Oh,
you know.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's I thought, you know, I was like, oh yeah, I guess I was. I thought, oh man. And so then at some point I started making plans to take a trip to Ireland or England.
Yes.
And follow the tour or something. But the funny thing was that in less than a year's time, Roy was on my doorstep, literally. Mm-hmm. And that happened because of a guy named Bill Robertson,
uh-huh.
who had contacted Roy somehow. I guess he contacted Darren, and he said, you know, he had put together some shows for some bands in the past. And I think that maybe it was Darren had put out a message saying, I don't know if it was to ever. If it was viewed by everyone, but the Roy was coming to visit his son in California and kind of wanted to do a little playing here, and thought, well, he didn't have representation or management, but in the U.S. But if some people could put together gigs, you know, feel free. And he wanted to play New York.
Ah, okay, yes.
And so Bill, great guy, and his wife Lori, they who are living in Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin. They he just started kind of contact. I think he sent out a message on Stormcock. Do you remember that?
I'm trying to remember. I don't actually. I'm going to have to look at the archives.
So he sent out this thing, and I kind of couldn't believe it, saying like, "Yeah, you know, if you can get a gig for him, you know,
this
that'd
is
be
your
great."
Big chance, thought, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, well, that's crazy. And I had my old college roommate had he was working at. Like one of the coolest clubs in Chicago, and I just like, well, I that doesn't seem hard. I got to give that a go.
Oh dear.
And so we tried that, and the club, it was the Metro in Chicago, and they were like, what? No, I don't think so. And then, but I sort of started going on the hunt, and I was talking with Bill. I went on the hunt for a place, and I started getting frustrated. It's funny, I started getting frustrated. That I wasn't getting the place as I wanted mm-hmm. or whatever. And I was talking to Bill, or I talked to his wife on the phone, and she said, oh, well, we've just got it. He's like, no, you can do it. We've just got like this coffee shop gig set up for him in Wisconsin. And I was like, oh, well, I can do that. I can get something. And I ended up getting a nice place called the Abbey Pub, which was, and I was pleased to see that Woody Guthrie had, I mean, not Arlo Guthrie had played like the month before. It's like, okay, so it's Irish.
It's got some sort of cred, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it, you know, it's a nice little place. I hadn't heard of it before. But now it's funny, now I've seen that neat bands like the Clientele and things, you know, I've noticed on YouTube that, you know, it seems like things have picked up there.
Mm.
It's probably all Roy's
doing. I was just going to say, all thanks to you and Roy, yeah.
So anyways, so Roy came along, and this was actually the first gig.
Right.
I think that... Maybe there had been something kind of like he had actually done something somewhere on the East Coast some time before. But the first gig of the first tour in like 15 years or more was this gig at the Abbey Pub. And, you know, it was great. And then so we put him and Tracy up for the night after the show. And what happened was that I was, you know, pulling artwork, you know, out showing it like, hey, look what I could do, you know.
As you would, and, yeah.
Right. And he thought that was great. And he's like, well, you know, and we exchanged information and said, let's stay in touch.
Ah.
And I mean, I have to just describe what a thrill that was because this was I wasn't sure I'd ever get to see him.
Yeah.
And at the sound check, he's just like, just like running through, you know, that. And I was, literally getting choked up. I just sort of overwhelmed.
Mm.
And they're like, oh, one of the effects boxes needs a battery. Where can we get? I was like, I'll go get one from the corner store.
Yeah.
I kind of needed to leave the room and get a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, yeah.
I was really just overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fantastic night. The only problem is he was still having, you know, those health issues at the time where, you know, he'd have nosebleeds and stuff.
Yeah, he had a bad patch of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Near the end of the gig, right at the end of Highway Blues, he just, bam, you know.
Yeah.
Right as he's striking those last chords, he, you know, nose just burst.
Right.
It's just, you know. But he managed it well, of course. And it was, you know, moved on, and it was fantastic. So that is how I got started. From then, shortly after, you know, he contacted me and said that he was interested in me doing some artwork for the Dream Society.
Right. Pretty interesting to have come from, you know, having this distant appreciation for somebody to you know. I know what you mean about being in the sound check and feeling so emotionally overcome by it. I mean, people that don't really get into music never quite understand that, but it can hit you like a wave of force sometimes. If it, you know, if the timing's right and it hits you emotionally in some way. It's amazing.
And I think I'm a kind of a romantic and a sentimental kind of person anyway, but I do get really into music, and I've been, you know, I've gotten really into different people through the years, you know, different bands or singers.
Yeah.
But Roy surpassed all that, and, you know, it became, I mean, I got really into things like Zappa, or, you know, even David Bowie for a while, or Elvis Costello, all kinds
there's
of.
There's nothing wrong with Barry. I was playing some just an hour ago, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. But when I got into Roy, it was, I used to, you know, the funny thing is I used to be, my first really big obsession as a teenager was Pink Floyd.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, you know, ironic now, you know, with the Roy's connection to them.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
None of that stuff is, you know, it all pales in comparison to my appreciation for Roy, I'd say.
Mm. So what did you do with Dream Society then? I mean, how did the professional relationship develop?
Well, it was great. He, you know, he's full of energy, and he sent really neat. He, you know, started sending like descriptions of what, you know, sort of little bits of poetry almost that were the art direction was almost like poetry.
Oh,
so it was really neat. Like,
that's interesting.
There was a, you know, for the which song is it? Songs of Love or. What comes right after Songs of Love? But there's one where there's a painting that I did in there that's has the line "Force your belly right through my brain."
Mm. Can't remember what song that is offhand, but yes,
I could get it up here on the iTunes. But like it had some neat. There was a neat thing about, like, you know, there's a pregnant. There's like a mother expecting child, and like the universe with time evolving and expanding, right, bursts through her brain, and, you know, the agony or something, the ecstasy and agony or something like that. I wish that I had the notes with me that he'd sent, but it was great. Like, it was, you know, in a couple of sentences, it was huge. Like, but it was like, my God, how are you supposed to illustrate that?
So he basically gave you the concepts, but also in a sort of fair, in a moderately visually descriptive way. Is that fair to say?
Well, yeah, but this one in particular, which is one I'm probably my favorite in the Dream Society. That one he was slightly ambiguous and kind of left open some creativity for me. But I mean, there was descriptive in that, like, yeah, you've got. He wants to show, you know, a woman pregnant with the universe, like, smashing through her brain, you know, with time evolving.
A bit of a tool order, like, maybe, yeah.
So, I mean, it's descriptive, but anyways, I was excited to do that. I sort of came up with this sort of universal mother thing,
right,
that kind of going through this almost like medical, you know, you kind of see through and you can see the skull and you can see inside the baby in utero, you know. Mm-hmm. And but anyways, it was fun. And then inside of that sort of universal mother thing, I have, you know, the lungfish and evolve animals that, you know, lizards and birds and a monkey that has the DNA coming off its tail and stuff like that. And that was a lot of fun.
So you took some fairly general direction and then embellished it and added to it. On that one. Yeah. Okay.
On that one, and I would say that was the most like that, besides the cover itself, where I always tried to throw in on all these. He has really specific directions, and sometimes more so than others. On this one, I would say, like, there's another one that has to do with Come the Revolution.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you'll have the opportunity to shoot them. And it's about that your only chance, the new generation is coming. And in their infancy, you know, that's when they're vulnerable. But,
yeah,
you know, they're taking over. I guess that some of that was a little bit left open.
Right, okay.
But then the drawing for these 50, the drawing for these 50 years was a really, that was more of a descriptive, you know, that had a real clear direction. And I would say that later when I did, everything since that has been really, you know, he would really give me a lot of direction. And he's good. He's really good at knowing what he wants. Mm-hmm. And that's what an artist always wants, is the director, art director, to have a vision that they know about. And
yeah.
That they, you know.
Yeah.
You don't want someone that, it's always frustrating to work for someone that's just reacts to what you do and said, nah, well.
Oh, I know. Well,
something different.
I get a little bit of that even with my work, because people will say, I want the system to do X. And, you know, they can't tell you any more about that. And then you give them something that you think
like
is it, and
they
say, I didn't mean that, you know.
Yeah,
but it's
after a few times of that, it's frustrating.
I've taken to doing sort of prototyping, lashing up stuff very quickly, and then people could, once people have got something in front of them, they can then decide, they get a better idea of what they want. But I think possibly working with a lyricist depends on how they write their words, I suppose. But I don't know, but I could imagine that they would approach things in a fairly visual manner or conceptual manner anyway. So perhaps it's easier for somebody that's written these works to think of some sort of visual representation.
Right. I mean, it's similar to if I'm working for a creator of a cartoon show, you know, the creator will know. They'll know what they want, you know, because it's their thing. It's their baby. And it's the same with Roy. And he, it's when you're in some sort of compartmentalized, you know, and there's several sort of heads to answer to, and then I can get confusing. But but Roy was, you know, he's really clear. And what's nice is that though sometimes there will be a little bit of play in like, let's try this or that. But
right.
Like I say, it's a difference between just reacting to what you do to really thinking and bouncing off of back and forth. And plus, it helped, I think, I felt like it helped that I was so familiar with his work by that point and kind of knew what he was about. And I wasn't surprised by things he was asking for, and I was ready to go.
One thing I definitely know about him is that he throws himself 100% into any project that he does.
That's right.
And if anybody was going to give you the best kind of direction for your stuff, it would be him. I mean, it's talking about the Dream Society, it's actually quite amusing in a way, because I'd got to know him reasonably well by then, and actually when they did the final mixing and mastering of the Dream Society, I went with him to the studio. Which I find quite amusing, really, because you'd done some of the artwork and I was hanging around when they were doing the audio side of it, but I could see even then that he was picking out little things that he could hear that, well, obviously I didn't have a clue, but I mean, he was so intent on getting it as good as he possibly could.
That's right.
And that he just was, shows. It shows in the final product.
Yeah, it's beautifully produced, you know. And he, you're right, he was 100% into that project. And what was great for me also working on it was that he sent me the demo while I was doing the artwork.
Yeah.
He sent me the whole record. And did you hear it by chance?
No, I only ever got to hear the as I say, the rough and then the final bits. I didn't hear,
okay,
the,
of
didn't
the
hear
mix,
any demo stuff.
Right. Yeah. Of the final record.
Yeah.
Well, this demo is fantastic, I have to say. I mean, and I often love demos of bands, and you know, it's always, but you know, I think that there are songs on there. It's funny. I think about Songs of Love, the first track, and you had somebody comment earlier on one of the podcasts that poor woman singing.
Oh, they didn't like her voice. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because on the demo version, it's just Roy sings her part.
Right.
You know, he plays both parts, and I don't know. I mean, if that was a distraction for people, it doesn't bother me. But just the whole feel of the demo, just was so beautiful. Mm-hmm. It was great to be able to have that to listen to. Mm. You know, while it was very exciting, and I, you know, I really love on that record. I really love Dancing All the Night.
Yes, that's a beautiful song.
Yeah, you know, it's nice. It's so personal, and it's just gorgeous. I love the arrangement at the end of it, the horns stuff.
That comes. That's right, the dancing sort of, yeah.
But the demo of that is just amazing as well. And it's, I know, it's just one of those things I wish people would hear it, would be able to hear it. I think Roy should... That would be one thing I would like to.
Well, that's,
you know, I think he could do a demo.
Yeah.
A demo, you know, he could pick through things and find cool demos. I mean,
well, we did it with Born in Captivity. I mean, that's an album of demos.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hadn't ever thought there might be other fun stuff to do in a similar way, but that'd be lovely.
Well, who knows?
Yeah.
We don't know if people would want like a whole Dream Society demo record, but I mean, I think that you could pick. Certainly, I imagine. There's stuff in the vaults there, you know, from various albums that would be of interest. But I don't know if you never know what he thinks about that.
Indeed.
But that's been a neat thing that I still listen to that sometimes.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah. So after the Dream Society,
right?
What happened after that?
Well, the next thing was The Monster. And in there, he... He was like, well, I've got someone else. Someone wants to do the cover. And, you know, he had somebody that really wanted to do the cover. And I think in the end that he and Tracy sort of handled it themselves, which I thought was nice. I thought that it turned out really nice.
Yeah,
I liked
it did.
It's the
nice sort of face hidden in it and everything, yeah.
Yeah. But he said, you know, would you do an illustration for The Monster? And so... I said, yes, of course. And I think right before that happened, it was 2000, and he invited that guy, Bill, and his wife, who I mentioned before, and somebody from another guy named Bill, I think, that was working at Rhino Records in L.A., and his son, Ben, and me, out for, you know, to celebrate the new millennium.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was fun. Except that we all got terribly sick. Some horrible bug got us.
Oh dear!
I was the first to go. It was really. We had like a. I had a great first couple of days, and then.
So you actually had a Y2K bug. Sorry,
I did.
Sorry, that was an IT joke there. Sorry.
No, yeah, at Roy's house.
Right.
Yeah. So it was weird, but during that. I think on New Year's Eve, he played us The Monster. He's like, I've got a tape in his pocket. And he played us The Monster, and it was great. And I love that song.
Well, that album has been reviewed in a very mixed fashion by people.
Some people
don't like it. But that song is a high point. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Oops. And I think, you know, I hear people, you know, you've had people... saying, you know, talking, commenting about it, and you know, some people aren't into it. But I just don't understand how people can't be into that song in particular.
Yeah.
Like how, I mean, I think it makes it so you can't dismiss the record because that song is so strong. I particularly love the line that says, on a level of PlayStation where the rich become the poor. Mm. And that's fantastic. Because I'm just imagining Roy playing a new video game, Grand Theft Auto or something, but instead it's, you know, some sort of, you know, it's political in nature.
Quite.
I just think that's funny, but beautiful at the same time, which is one thing I love about Roy is that, you know, his music is often really humorous while being really deep at the same time. I love that. I love that in films, and no one ever can get it in any form. But that song, that was fun, doing that illustration. And I feel pretty good about that one. It's funny, some of the illustrations I feel better about than others. Mm-hmm. And that one I agonized with and wasn't completely happy with. But, you know, the weird thing about this picture is I did this in 2000. And in the background of the picture, it's sort of the monster that is society eating itself, you know, eating society. Right. It was kind of how he's describing. It's like, you know, the monster eating survivors at the scene of the accident kind of thing, you know?
Right, yeah.
So everyone is standing around. So I've got a guy videotaping, you know, this big beast spitting someone out. You know, he's got the camera, you know, for the television. And I've got sort of a mutant pope in there.
Mm-hmm.
And but the weirdest thing is that I have the Capitol dome. Basically, I have the Capitol building with a cross on top,
yeah,
and a dollar sign on the dome, and an airplane, like a 747, crashed right into the dome. And this is before 9/11.
Oh, right, yeah.
So that, you know, after 9/11, it sort of struck me, you know, that's really weird. And another thing that's weird is if you get the No One Ever Gets Out Alive single.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's right. It has, isn't it? Oh. Yes, I'd forgotten about that.
So this is some strange stuff. This is cosmic, perhaps. prophetic or something. Mm. But, you know, no one ever gets out alive. There's a towers. Mm. You know?
Mm.
That's just like, that's funny, you know. And I remember pointing that out to Roy. I was like, you know, I had an airplane crashing into there. And that wasn't something that Roy asked for.
Yeah.
You know, that was another one of those neat instances where he kind of left some stuff open to me, and I had some fun. Right.
And it kind of fits in with the sort of general theme, and it makes sense.
So that was that, and they used that kind of as a picture online, and then he later put it in the book, mm-hmm. which is the next thing that I did.
Ah, for the famous book, yes.
The book, which was great. You know, I think I've got five illustrations in here, and one of them is that monster painting. It's nice that he put that one in there. And on this one, he gave me, I'd say, more art direction than usual.
I'm battling the urge to pick up my book and start rifling through it as we're talking. Yeah. Now, but yeah.
When the I Hate the White Man, now that was fun, mm-hmm. to be able to do a drawing for I Hate the White Man, you know. And he was, I forget exactly how it went, but it was like, have a tank. I don't know. He just say a. I forget how the rough sketches. You know, I've got all this stuff, all my rough sketches and things.
Yeah.
In a box in California, unfortunately, but it didn't start off. We ended up with a Viking tank, but there was some sort of loose sketching, and I think maybe he kind of left things open for a while, and then he's like, "No, it needs to be. You know, what drives it home?" And he's like, "A Viking." A tank rolling through, you know, destroyed city or something. And, you know, it was like a Viking tank just popped out of his mouth.
Right.
And I thought, that's fantastic. How much fun will that be to draw?
I have succumbed, and I've just opened up my book to have a look. That is that's a very evocative image, isn't it? Evil be to him who evil thinks.
Yeah, and that was, you know, he was, you know, he said, you know, have a little banner at the bottom, and, you know, he described. That was a nice little back and forth there,
yeah,
on that one, as I recall. But everything like, you know, the machine gun crossed with the sword. I think that was his idea to put that on the, you know, that's up on. It's like the banner.
Yeah.
Of the, you know.
And you've got the industrial sort of factory at the back. And then you've got that lone hand sort of scrubbling up from the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty dark.
It is dark. But then again, so is the song, you know.
That's right. I remember now, I did rough sketches that really I tried to break down things from the lyric, and I presented this big crazy picture with where I had medieval battles, and I had things about the whitewash, and I forget all the things I had there. I was really trying to work in a lot of elements from the lyrics. And then he's like, we need the Viking tank. And I was like, well, that's much better.
maybe he wanted something slightly less literal and more thematic somehow.
Yeah, kind of more iconic or something. Yeah. And then the next one was, then he gave me art direction for the game. And that was much more specific. That was one of those things where it's like, we need the double helix, with a sparrow or I forget the bird, but he had a particular bird that I drew on top of the double helix. And then he said, and then we'll have the lovers embracing. Yeah. And then it's all underwater. Like, I suppose the ice caps have melted and this is, we have a ruined city underwater and there's there's like these barrels that are bombs. I don't know what you call it.
Depth charges, yes.
Depth charges.
Yeah.
Floating down to finish it off, I suppose.
What's with the false teeth at the bottom of the... I hope everybody listening has now got their books out if they've got... What's with the false teeth at the bottom there with the tongue?
That's just... that's an upside down skull. And you'll see that I've got a spine... Running up through the middle of a double helix.
Yes, of course.
And Roy was saying, mutant arms or things coming out of the spine. I think that he wanted a spine, and I just stuck a skull at the end of it because that's where it goes.
It seems natural, yeah.
And then I just put in, I sort of decorated it with weird undersea creatures and tried to put a little bit of a personal touch on it. Mm. But and he liked that. He's like, what is that weird thing swimming over there? And I was like, I don't know. And it's fun, to get his approval on that, And I thought that one, I was pretty pleased with that one. And then the Berliners one was pretty straightforward, But, it's just the wall coming down. And
cue more rustling of paper from my end, but yes, there we are.
And
yeah, was it? It was. Must have been him that wanted Man City FC written on the wall.
Yes, it
must
was.
Have been him.
That's right.
Right. Okay.
Well, can you? I don't know that I've ever understood that. Can you shed some light on that?
Well. Roy, unfortunately, he's a deluded person because he thinks there's some merit in watching football. And, and having been born in Manchester, he supports Manchester City. It's as simple as that. But I'm afraid I don't do sports, so I've never understood all of this fanaticism that takes place. But there you go. That's all it is. That's all it is.
And it's funny that you bring that up because it's kind of a surprise to me because, I've always been, not into sports at all, And, my dad used to be like, why don't you do some sports?
And same here.
Yeah, I didn't go for it. I was like, I don't want to watch it. I just want to draw pictures and paint and listen to music and smoke pot, really. I don't want to do that stuff. And so I was really, I've been to his house on two occasions. And both times that I was there, Roy schools me on cricket.
I think he despairs of ever trying that with me. Actually,
and I just don't get it. You know, but I find it fascinating that these matches last for so long, and it's not like other sports. So I find it fascinating, but I don't really understand what's going on. I kind of started. I guess I got a little bit. I scratched the surface of understanding a bit, but. Yeah. But I was sort of surprised at this, this beautiful poet, musician. It was just all about sports, loves football and cricket.
Well, actually, just to divert slightly for a moment, it's a good sort of humanizing trait, because people tend to put people like Roy up on a higher pedestal and think that they spend all of their day thinking lofty thoughts and, you mm-hmm. know, producing these works of art. But the fact is, they're normal people as well. And I find it reassuring in a way that you know, he's sufficiently yeah. normal that he's supports yeah. Man City and likes to watch the cricket on the telly, you know. Why not?
That's right. And yeah. he had mentioned to me one time, we were talking, for some reason, talking about Robert Plant, and he was saying that, I said, well, what do you guys talk about? You know, he speaks to him quite often, and he says, you know, all we talk about is, you know, we talk about sports, yeah. you know, the ladies of our life and what we're doing, that kind of, you
yeah.
know.
Just a normal conversation.
Normal guys.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Which is, it's great. Like you said, humanizing, yeah. you know, it's refreshing to know. And you had some talk about that on some of these podcasts that, you know, that where people have talked about that, you know, you realize that these guys are the same as you and me. And,
that's
and I
right.
definitely had Roy on this incredible pedestal, you
that's,
know.
That's
and,
exactly it, yeah.
And, you know, it's always easily starstruck and things, but it's great that it's getting to know Roy has not only humanized him, but, you know, the rest of, you know, Hollywood or rock and roll or whatever, you know. And so now I'm not so starstruck mm-hmm. by anyone. I was like, well, you know, I've met Roy, so what does it matter? Who else? You know? And it's really true. Like, and it's funny, like, while I was doing the Dream Society in particular, and even a bit after that, for the first few years of knowing him and talking to him from time to time, whenever I'd talk to him on the phone, I mean, I would really be kind of nervous, and you know, it would take a few minutes for me to decompress it, but you know, that's it's neat that that's been a neat experience, is that that's kind of gone away. I don't,
yeah.
you know, you really get it that, yeah, this is, you know, these they're regular people. Of course, they do have extraordinary differences, I'd say, you know, with celebrity and stuff, it becomes a different bag, but
well, yeah, I mean, they've got certain abilities or attributes, you know.
Yeah, and of course, you know, what they do is, you know, fantastic. Mm. But nice to know that, you know, they are the same. But so the last thing I did in the book was...
Hope you enjoyed part one of that interview. Part two will be next month. Now a little bit of music, and this time round it's going to be Sophisticated Beggar, but this is the live performance from the Royal Festival Hall CD.
I'm just a sophisticated beggar living underneath your summer day, counting all my blessings as I'm counting all the money I've accumulated on my way. I don't want your plastic gods or tin pot religions, silly ideas. All I want is your money. I listen to you, but I know you say. And I'm just a sophisticated beggar living underneath your summer day. And I'm an emancipated firework exploding along your busy street, my guitar as you pass me in your car, always trying to knock me clean off my feet. I don't care if you own the whole world and the stars in the sky or a heavenly bar. You're wasting your time if it's only that you're they're trying to convey. Cause I'm just a sophisticated beggar living underneath your summer day. Hipster drinking dreams and eating consciousness, standing in the gutter in the middle of a splatter hide and the horrors underneath my largesse. I'll be hoarse for a million years, trying to rescue my brain from the flood of my mind. Sophisticated beggar living underneath your summer day. Summer day.
Sophisticated Beggar from the Royal Festival Hall double CD set from Roy's 60th birthday celebration. And as you'll have gathered if you were listening carefully, that was John Renbourn accompanying Roy there. Brilliant acoustic guitarist in his own right and well worth checking out, either solo or as part of Pentangle. Now, the A to Z of Harper, this time round it's the letter S, and I was a bit sport for choice, but I've picked South Africa. This is a classic song which Roy was very clever with, because he wanted to write a song protesting about apartheid in South Africa. But rather than take the easy approach of doing a kind of venom-filled protest song, he decided to write a love song about the country itself. And it really works, and it stood the test of time, because remember, this was written in the early 70s. The version I'm playing is from the BBC Sessions, disc one.
Once I was another's lover, now I am my own. Trying to call myself a brother, living here alone. Maybe if you came to see me, wishing I wasn't so blind, sitting here thinking to be free. Maybe we'd all change our mind.
sky and UFO. I am young and strong. We have never met each other.
Now for some listener feedback. I had a really nice email from KJB, which I'll read out in full. He says, "Hello, Paul. Just a quick note to say how much I enjoyed the Feb podcast. Like you, I was deeply saddened by the passing of Patrick McGoohan. I was 15 years old in 1967 when The Prisoner was first aired, and I can't begin to tell you what an impact it had on the pimply youth I was back then. The programme subsequently influenced my life in many ways, in music, literature, cinema, philosophy, and Roy McGoohan's Blues has long been chosen as my funeral song when I finally fall off the penny farthing. We'll be seeing Nick live in Basingstoke later this month and looking forward to it a great deal. Thanks for the podcast. Keep up the good work. Best regards, Keith." Cheers, Keith. That's a really nice email, and I think the Basingstoke gig was last night, in fact, if you're listening to this on the 1st of March, and reports are that it was fantastic. So I hope you enjoyed yourself. Sorry I wasn't there. Okay, other feedback. Pecan Pie said, "Hi, Paul. Just listened to episode 19 on the bus this morning and really enjoyed it. I heard Referendum Legend in a totally new light this morning and had to pull out the inner sleeve for HQ to read the lyrics again. Roy's own comment on that sleeve, Legend was always a candidate for how I thought intense music should be. I wasn't able to do it then, but I've got much nearer now. This, of course, led me back to The Sophisticated Beggar for a listen to Legend, to which I don't have lyrics, must get the book. Anyway, back to the podcast. Lynn's interview was interesting. Forget Me Not is a beautiful song. Home is easy listening, as stated on side one of Flashes from the Archives of Oblivion, not just my opinion. And then to finish on the Prisoner theme, inspired. This also sent me rooting and searching for the old VHS tapes of the series as I listened to McGoohan's Blues. And now to find a working VCR. Bye for now, Paul C." Cheers, Paul. Appreciate that very much. Webby Lar says, "Legend has always been one of my favourite tracks. Referendum is possibly a bit more focused on its target, but loses something with its fuller sound production." Interesting. There was also a lot of debate about Lynn's comment about possibly getting a big producer interested in Nick Harper's music. And Dr. Doom the Optimist says, "That's the exact same question I was about to ask. This was the most interesting point in the podcast for me." Well done again, PD. Nice work on the Prisoner interludes, and your own comments, observations are always incisive too. What a crawler. "I think Nick needs to refine his sound on record, and a new producer would hopefully do that. his recordings can sometimes sound a bit flat and over clean, if that makes sense, and they're not doing justice to the songs. Now that actually is interesting, and I actually think I agree with that. I'd like to have some kind of freshness to the audio. This elicited a response from Lynn, who had mock outrage about the fact that the producing discussion was the most interesting part of the podcast, and all the rest of her interview perhaps wasn't so interesting. I'll not comment on that any further, but she does say she's not going to give any more info about that. She says it's not so much being a secret as respecting that people may not necessarily want it publicised. It probably won't ever happen anyway, but the person concerned is a friend, and so that's how it came up. All right, now, the usual credits and copyright, I'm afraid. This podcast is issued under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 2.0 UK, England and Wales license, which means you can freely share it with others, but you can't change it, claim you made it, or charge any money for it. The Roy Harper music in this podcast is used by very kind permission of Science Friction Limited and is not for copying or redistribution. The intro music is by kind permission of Adam Leonard. Now, finally, some links. The Stormcock Empire is at www.stormcock.net, whereby you can download these podcasts, participate in the forums, run your own blog, and find out all sorts of other stuff. There's enormous amounts of info there. If you want to help the Rock Podcast, please give us a review on iTunes, and a number of you have done so already, and I really thank you very much for those. Very helpful indeed. If you've got lots of spare cash, there's a PayPal link on the front page of stormcock.net. But of course, no obligation. If you would like to send me feedback, either post your feedback to the stormcock.net forums, email me personally, pd@stormcock.net, or if you're feeling very brave, leave me an audio voicemail. Either email me an MP3 file at pd@stormcock.net, or you can use the plain old telephone and call, if you're in the UK, 01223 850282. If you're outside the UK, +44 1223 850282, and I really would like to have some audio feedback, and that must be about the 8th month running I've asked for it and not got any. I don't know. I'm actually, it's got to the stage now where I am tempted to impersonate somebody on a very bad phone line and say something outrageous to try and get some reaction. So don't make me do that, for God's sake. I'd also like just quickly to mention Dave Burnham's podcast, the Ad Astral podcast. Episode 1 came out a few weeks ago, and it's very good indeed. Episode 2, I believe, is imminent. AdAstralPodcast.com is the place to go. I'm expecting to get a trailer from Dave at some point in the near future, which I'll run. And if you are particularly obsessive about the Roy Harper podcast, then who isn't, let's face it, you can find a trailer done by me for the Roy Harper podcast on Dave's podcast. Yes, I know, it's a lot of cross-fertilisation going on here. That's about it for this month. I'll see you next month, but for now I will leave you with the track New England from the album The Green Man. Take care, see you soon.
When he was a young boy, Johnny was a soldier, fighting all the battles, wishing he was older. Smoking in the corner, comforting the creature, living in the present, dying for the future. Oh, in England. Oh, when he was a young man, everyone a pop star, swinging in the 60s, swaggering up posture, power to the people, riding in a big car, labor in the present, condom in the future. Oh, oh, in England, oh,
a place where everybody helps themselves to everybody else's dreams, where land of hope and glory teams score gold, steal cars, whilst EastEnders turn Punch and Judy into intellectual property.
Oh, in England, oh.
he grew a grey hair. Soon he got a grandchild, jumping on the software, walking on the wild side. She's full of beans and chips, she's everybody's saviour, flattening out the hips with oldie world behaviour. Oh, oh, in England, oh. He became an old man, waiting at the station with his worker woman for the big vacation. Power to the tourist and his information, queuing on the off chance of wide awake cremation. Landing on the air mile, all the world together, coming through the turnstile, stranger than the weather. Oh, in England, oh, New England, where everybody helps themselves to everybody else's dreams, where land of hope and glory teams score goals, steal cars, whilst EastEnders turn Punch and Judy into intellectual property. Oh, New England. Oh, New England. Oh, New England. Oh, New England. Oh,
place where everybody helps themselves to everybody else's dreams, where land of hope and glory teams score goals, steal cars, whilst EastEnders turn Punch and Judy into intellectual property.
For the future.